Be a part of the best pro wrestling podcast today by supporting the Going In Raw Patreon. You can enjoy access to the live taping of the show, exclusive merchandise, and patron-only episodes, and so much more. Support Going In Raw today. Click the link in the description.
This is Charlotte, and you're watching Going In Raw. That sounds terrible.
What's up? This is the most must-see WWE superstar of all time and his lovely, gorgeous wife,
Marie.
And you are going in Raw.
What's up? It's your girl, Sasha Banks, the legit boss, and you are watching Going In Raw.
Oh, baby, I like it raw. Oh, baby, I like it raw. And you are tuned in to Going In Raw right now. How you doing?
Hey, friendo, Steve here.
And Larson.
And welcome to Going In Raw View. This is the show where we review old crap. Usually the worse, the better. And oh boy, do we have a classic for you today.
A wrestling classic.
The wrestling classic included with the Rolls Royce. I love when, like, WWF, like Vince, was trying to portray this feeling of elitist, no, being a bit of feet, I guess.
Affluence.
There you go, affluence. Like, oh, this is a very distinguished competition.
WCW gave away a Camaro. WWF gave away a Rolls Royce.
Exactly. So, we're available here on the Patreon. By the way, the wrestling, the Going In Raw View, our pay-per-views that we review are voted upon by our $10 a month and up patrons. If you're interested in participating in the process for deciding what gets selected here for us to take a look at, go to patreon.com/Steven Larson. You can do so there. And we have a bunch of other reward tiers.
You get a lot more at the $10 tier than just voting on one show, too.
You get a postcard.
Yeah, they're right there.
And, of course, access to our $5 rewards, live streams.
And $1, which is just a thank you.
Mm-hmm. So, that brings us to the wrestling classic. Now, a little background on the wrestling classic.
I really wanted to watch this one. I had this one up for vote about three. Oh, not that kind of background.
Yeah.
I had this one up for vote like four consecutive voting cycles.
And I think this won this particular week because
I said I really wanted to watch it.
Literally, when I posted the poll, Larson really wants this one to win.
And I said that in the video, too.
And I think it was fortuitous timing on your part because you went away on vacation. Absence makes the heart grow fonder. People are more willing, I think, to grant you your wish, Larson.
Well, that's nice of them. Thank you very much.
There you go. That's. I think they would appreciate that.
So, yes, a little backstory on the wrestling classic. This was WWF's second attempt at a pay-per-view type show.
Right.
Following, I guess, the success of the very first WrestleMania, which happened in March of 85.
Yeah.
This was November of 85.
This was actually a pay-per-view.
Mm-hmm.
And this was literally the next. So, when we say pay-per-view,
well, WrestleMania 1 was available through closed-circuit television, I believe.
Do we know what that means?
I have zero idea.
Because I thought that meant you can go to certain locations that would host closed-circuit TV, but I don't even think that's the case. I honestly have no idea.
We have the internet in front of us.
I know. I looked it up before. It's a much bigger task than I think you're ready to get into here. Because that just tells you a security system. I don't think WrestleMania 1 was seen
only
on security
cameras.
Well, no,
it's a TV system which signals are not publicly distributed but are monitored primarily from surveillance. Okay, yeah, but it's just not a TV. It's a TV system that where the signals aren't publicly distributed.
Right, exactly.
So you have to pay to get access to these television
signals. But I have
no
idea how to do that.
I don't either.
So, but look, here on Wikipedia it says pay-per-view event. So in some manner this was not available freely to everybody.
You had to pay to get the closed-circuit television access.
It's just interesting that this is such an asterisk, you know? Like, WrestleMania is now a massive event. Survivor Series, Royal Rumble, you know, those are all massive events that were born pretty early in the WWF's. Like after this, what was the next?
WrestleMania 2.
No.
Series debuted in 87, I want to say.
Okay, so there you go. Later. Okay. And that, of course, is iconic at this point. The Wrestling Classic never came back.
No. It's a single night, 16-person single elimination tournament.
Maybe that's why, because they just realized that, you know what, the format of this was pure crap.
It's a lot to get in one show.
It's so much fun, but it was all over the map. It was a mess of an event.
It really was. And part of it, too, is they felt the need to have interviews between each match.
Yeah.
Which was, you know, you have matches, several matches that were a minute or less. Give these matches more time. Ditch the interviews.
No, man. It was, honestly, in my opinion, this was perfect the way it was.
Okay.
Oh, I loved it. I thought it was great.
I'm just saying, if you want a more thrilling wrestling product.
The longest match on the card was the final.
About 9 minutes, right?
9 minutes. The second longest was... So they actually had a match for Hogan's WWF Championship. He fought Piper in a singles match. That was 7 minutes. Tito Santana versus Orndorff was 8 minutes.
And the shortest match was 8 seconds.
Yeah.
Another one under a minute.
There 9 seconds, 17 seconds, 45 seconds. There were three sub-minute matches. It's great. It is great. We need more like this.
I will say that they did get creative with a couple matches in terms of how to book them. So,
they
ended short or ended quickly, but they took some interesting paths.
There were so many janky finishes. This should have been called the Dusty Classic. Dusty Rhodes should have been involved. There were so many, by my definition of the lithium baby, this is a dream come true, okay? We got 15, 14 tournament matches. I want a good 80% of these, baby, to be a dust that finishes. Nobody wins.
Yeah.
Literally, one of these matches, the winner
counted his own pinfall.
It was fantastic. Let's start from the beginning.
Yeah, so the beginning of the show saw them do a video package saying that tonight they were going to give away a Rolls Royce.
Yeah.
Affluence, as you mentioned.
Yeah, exactly. It had that very, like, ooh, proper, like, BBC-ish.
Yeah.
But it's like, you know.
Well, because it starts with Vince, Lord Alfred Hayes, and Susan.
Yeah.
Breaking down the tournament bracket.
Who was Susan, exactly?
I have no idea.
Susan, we both speculate, was actually a ghost from the early 1800s.
Well, or the Victorian era.
Victorian. It wasn't the Victorian era in the 1800s?
I think later, yeah.
Okay, yeah. From the Victorian era, because she was dressed like that.
Yeah.
And she didn't really talk that much. She talked a little bit. It makes me laugh so much when Vince... This is why the Attitude Era was so great. Because Vince reveled in the lowbrow nature.
Try as he might as to put forth an air of affluence.
Yeah, exactly. Trying to keep up appearances is not something Vince McMahon ever should have been doing.
No.
Because it's tacky and it's wonderfully tacky and it's brilliantly tacky. You know? But this was just like you're trying to do too much, man. We know you're a carny, Vince. We know you're a carny.
So we cut right to highlights from drawing opponents from the fish bowl.
Oh, that was fantastic.
So it was literally, I don't know, like eight people going up to a fishbowl and drawing a name of who they were going to take on in the first round.
And somehow, wasn't Macho Man pissed off at Elizabeth for something, too?
Yeah.
Why did you do this? Oh, yeah. It's like every time you see Savage, he's blaming Elizabeth.
I know.
That seemed to be like a common thread throughout like their 20 years of being in the business. We got a bunch of that.
After that, we got a Jack Tunney interview going over, I believe, the rules.
Yeah.
There's only one rule. You win your match, you dance. That's what he said.
That includes, evidently, being able to count your own pinfall. Yep.
Trick someone in getting counted out. That counts, too.
Yeah. Got your leg up on the rope, high on the second rope. Doesn't matter. You're losing.
Or
nobody's going to count rope break.
Or dive towards somebody. They move. You hit the ropes. You're injured.
You're injured, exactly.
Because you hit the rope.
Oh, it's so much weird.
Let's kick it off with the first match. Adrian Adonis versus...
Oh, hold on. I did like this, though. When they were running down, when Vince, Lord Alfred Hayes, and the ghost lady...
Susan
was like looking at the brackets and they were just spouting so much nonsense. And my favorite line was Lord Alfred Hayes saying, "These are the best conditioned athletes in the world."
Yes.
What are you talking about? Like if it was today, you can make the case for some like the 205 Live. Okay. You can make that case maybe.
Well, I mean,
Seth Rollins,
I thought that was funny given that there were three matches that lasted less than a minute.
I know. And we're talking about people like Adrian Adonis, which I don't know if I've ever seen an Adrian Adonis match. I didn't realize that his name was simply a play of irony. Mm-hmm. I did not realize that because this was not an Adonis. in any respect of the word. He didn't speak like you would think an Adonis would speak.
He used to be Ventura's tag team partner.
Oh, okay. I that sounds right. Adonis. What, like early in his career?
In the 70s, I think. I don't know.
Was he ever...
An Adonis?
Oh, so it was just a plant. Like, this is him in the 80s. So that's definitely ironic right there. And his early career only started 10 years before that. He trained under Fred Atkins from the Atkins Diet Guy? I don't think so, because look at this guy. He was born in 1910. That's fantastic. I always love when Wikipedia gives somebody's date of death or age at death, and it's a range because they don't really know.
Oh, yeah.
If you're born in 1910, there's a good chance you have no idea when your actual birth date was.
Oh, yeah, I know.
You know what they used to do? You know, they used to, like, have traveling, like, children, like adoption trains where they would stop into town and they'd have, like, a wealth of potential adoptee kids. And then you'd say, yeah, I want that one right there. That was a real thing back in the day. My my grandma-in-law used to talk about that.
Really?
Crazy.
It is crazy.
Yeah, man.
So Adrian Adonis took on Corporal Kirchner.
Do we know if Corporal Kirchner was actually a Corporal Kirchner? Was he? I want to know if he was legit a veteran.
I have no idea.
Oh, he's 59 now. Really? He's only 59? Boy, he must have been young there. Wow. Look at some of these names. Super Leather. Super Leather Face.
Wow.
R.T. Reynolds.
Oh, yeah. He was in, he did some stuff in Japan, some of the deathmatch stuff, I think.
Oh, that's cool.
If he was Leatherface, then yeah.
Oh, yeah. United States Army. Good for him. 82nd Airborne Division.
But check on the Leatherface thing. I think he did some stuff in Japan.
Let's see here. Japan. Here we go. Yeah. Yeah, in Japan. You're right. Villain in the same name from the movie Texas Chainsaw Man.
So I think we, last time we were in L.A., we stayed at our buddy's house. We watched that DVD, or that stuff of Foley and Terry Funk.
Okay.
And I think he made an appearance.
Oh, right. Anyways, Kirshner, clearly, by the way, when he lost, Adrian Adonis went for the pin. I didn't really write down notes on like the actual matches because they were just all a mess. He totally kicked out at like 2.5.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I've seen closer pinfalls these days that are counted like, you know, as 2.
Yeah.
And this was counted at 3.
Yeah. Oh, I know. Well, the finish was interesting because the corporal was going for a suplex.
Yeah.
And then Adrian Adonis reversed it to what the closest approximation would be a DDT.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
But it wasn't.
He sort of held on to him by the head as he was coming
he
down.
He made a downward motion,
yeah,
like a DDT.
Right.
But I don't know if at this point if the DDT. I'm sure it was invented because Jake Roberts was wrestling at this point.
Yeah, sure.
But I don't know if it was a part of Adrian Adonis' arsenal of moves or not,
or if this was simply a beneficial mistake.
It could be.
Yeah, happy accident.
Improvised reversal.
There you go.
Gave birth. You know, later on we saw a move that hadn't gained prominence yet, as far as I know. The sharpshooter.
Really?
Yeah.
In which match was that?
It was later on. Here, I'll find it. Someone did a sharpshooter.
Did they win with it?
No.
That figures.
They didn't even call it a sharpshooter.
Yeah.
But of course, it was a Scorpion Deathlock before the sharpshooter. Carry on. I'll find it.
So that match was 4 minutes. This next match was the Dynamite Kid versus Nikolai Volkov.
It was Adrian Adonis that did it in Dynamite Kid.
So, okay. So we had Nikolai Volkov after that. Wasn't there like an interview with... His interview was afterwards.
Volkov goes in the ring, mm-hmm. and sings the Soviet national anthem.
Meanwhile...
And as he finishes up, he's about to drop a promo. And as he starts to speak, Dynamite Kid goes the top rope.
He sort of saunters up to the top rope while Volkov isn't paying attention. And then,
Drop kicks him. Gets the pin. 8 seconds.
Yeah.
Picks up the win.
Was there an interview after that?
Yeah, Macho Man.
Okay. Oh, there was an Adrian Adonis interview?
Oh, yeah, between the two matches.
After his match? Okay. Yeah. Didn't really say much.
No.
Let's see here. Okay, so yeah, then we had a Macho Man interview, and that's when he was talking about not taking... Because wasn't his first match against
Putski?
Okay, Putski. He's very strong. Don't take him lightly. No, yeah.
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 And also because Ivan Putski looked like a time traveler from the 60s.
Yeah, he really did. I just think that he was a dude who was around in the 60s and didn't change anything. I think he started in like 1968. I want to say that's true.
I would have said 63.
The next match we had was... Yeah, I would have said that too, but I think I actually looked this up. Next match we actually had was Ivan Putski versus Macho Man. Interesting note about Ivan Putski, I looked him up a little bit.
Oh, yes.
He won... So 1 year prior to this, he won the Wrestling Observer. Yes, it was around back then. It's been around for a very long time. Respect your elders. Won the 1984 Worst Wrestler and Reader's Least Favorite Wrestler. So not only did he draw the ire of, I think, Dave Meltzer, but also the readers of the Wrestling Observer back then voted Ivan Putski worst person.
Well, worst wrestler.
Yeah. Awful person.
Well, I mean, I don't think the Wrestling Observer Newsletter Awards speak to a person's character, their wrestling ability, right?
Yeah, he debuted in 1968. I have no idea.
Yeah, I have no idea either. I'm asking seriously.
I'm assuming he's his trash. I mean, he's dead now. No, he's not. Oh, no, he's not dead yet. Wow, he's 76 years old, though.
Wow.
Yeah.
Anyways, Macho Man, of course, beat Putski. Got him in a pinning combination and put his feet on the turnbuckle.
Yeah, I would think it had more to do with the with his in-ring ability. Yeah, because yeah, he had zero in-ring ability. I know. His in-ring ability was literally just flexing a lot.
And he punched.
And he punched and he milled about.
Yeah.
So, but he flexed a lot.
Yeah, he did.
Like, he showed the people his muscles quite a bit.
He had large muscles.
And, yeah, he was an impressive specimen to a degree.
It was interesting seeing... there's a lot of matches that had these clash of styles, like Macho Man and Putski. Mm-hmm. Macho Man, you know, he was a guy, he's super athletic, super
way quick, ahead of his time.
Way ahead of his time. Same with Dynamite Kid, Steamboat. There's a lot of actually people in this tournament that you could say were ahead of their time. And it's interesting seeing styles clash between older wrestlers and newer ones, and eventually further in the tournament, you'd have Steamboat versus Savage.
Mm-hmm.
I think for the first time.
Yeah, so we did. Yeah,
predates their WrestleMania 3 match by 3 years.
Yeah, that's right. Macho Man didn't actually win cleanly in any of these matches.
No, he didn't. He was heel.
This one, yeah, he was a heel.
And I think this was shortly after he debuted.
Yeah, I think it was too. He had his feet on the ropes and got the dirty pin that way.
Mm-hmm.
So too bad, Putski, you're out.
Eliminated.
Next up we had a
Nikolai Volkov promo.
Very upset with what happened.
Yeah.
But you got, you know, jacked up Dynamite Kid coming at you with a drop kick while you're milling about talking.
Maybe Nikolai should have been a little more focused in the task.
Maybe he should pay attention a little bit more. What do you think about that?
All right, this next match is a little weird. Ricky Steamboat versus a very young Davey Boy Smith. Now, when Ricky Steamboat picked Davey Boy Smith's name from the fishbowl, he said something like, "He's a very nice guy."
He was the most diplomatic. This was a through line throughout his career. I noticed this a couple times. He did the same thing with Ric Flair. He was the most diplomatic promo guy I've ever seen in my life. He would always say like, "Oh yeah, well, he's a great competitor. He's a really nice guy." Even when he lost to Flair, "Well, I'll probably be talking to my lawyers about this because I'm not sure that I..." You know, he was just a very diplomatic promo guy.
Yeah.
Very unique.
So this match is pretty short, and at one point, Davey Boy leaps towards Steamboat, who's close to the ropes. Steamboat evades, so Davey Boy Smith just jumps right into the ropes.
Right, which you would think normally these days means one of two things. Either number one, you're going to, you know, get yourself out of it. Maybe it was like you can convert it into a suicide dive of some sort, but nobody's on the outside, so you just land on the outside of the ring.
No pads on the outside, it's concrete.
You could do a tranquilo. You could land in the ring.
Like
Almas does.
But here's the thing. He hit the ropes kind of awkwardly, but at no point was he ever twisted up in anything.
Right.
Like his leg didn't get twisted in the rope anyways. But the ref calls for the bell almost immediately. There's no trainers to come check on to make sure he's fine.
Right, right.
Again, his legs did not, no part of his body got twisted up in the ropes at all.
He just hit
the ropes and fell.
Dude, he was selling it really well.
Yeah.
To the degree that I had to rewind it and be like, "Wait, did I miss something? Was this a shoot? Like, did he really legit get hurt?" No.
No.
He just sort of...
The ref called for the bell, and Steamboat showed a concern.
Yeah.
For his apparently injured opponent.
He's a nice guy.
Yes.
Very diplomatic. But you know, my note about that was this was the first time in this entire tournament we saw actual wrestling happen. Because I don't really feel like there was much actual wrestling happening before.
No, both Steamboat and, especially back then, Davey Boy Smith. Very good wrestler.
Yeah, they were decent. Like, Macho Man didn't have anything to work with, but with Putski. That was the thing about that. Because he was just, like, running away. Next up, we had a JYD interview. Again, comes off like just some dude you'd probably be working with. Like, a very understated interview. he seemed very sincere.
Mm-hmm.
So that was cool. I think that was probably part of his appeal too.
Oh yeah.
People were just like, oh, he seems like a nice guy. Plus he had the funk.
Yeah.
You know, Iron Sheik versus Junkyard Dog was next.
Junkyard Dog was able
to break your back, Junkyard Dog.
Well, no, he didn't. Junkyard Dog managed to escape the camel clutch.
I'm trying to think of other Iron Sheik things I can say without being horribly offensive. And they're very, although the other day I do appreciate that he got on Twitter and said, Nazis, if you come to me, I break your back. Make you, what did he say? Make you what? Break your back.
Make you humble.
Make you humble. Brian Blair, make you humble. He is a punk. Junkyard Dog made me humble. The Vince McMahon. Sorry.
Yeah.
Once I get started with Iron Sheik, it's hard to not do it.
Junkyard Dog wins with a headbutt.
Yeah, that was rad. Yeah, that dude, he just had headbutts.
Mm-hmm.
It was great. Next up.
This was gross.
A highlight. No, dude. A highlight.
No, he spit chewing tobacco on the camera.
I'm sorry, man. Disgusting. But any Terry Funk interview.
It was fine until
that was nasty.
Spit tobacco on the lens of the
camera.
That
was really gross. He's so legit, though, man.
Oh, I know.
He's so legit. Yeah, he was going on about stuff. He was going to face a dude named Moondog Spot.
Yeah.
Who had like a bone with him.
Yeah, I don't get that gimmick at all.
I didn't really understand it, but I did want to know more about him. He was pretty rad. I wonder what his deal was.
I don't know.
Was that like a shoot? Was he really like
that? Oh, I don't know. I'll talk about this match while you look that up. So Funk gets down to the ring. Spot's already there, I think. And Funk grabs the mic and says, we don't want to fight each other.
Yeah.
Let's just both walk out of here and get counted out.
Oh, look, he's a normal guy. That's cool. He's got his bone with him.
And so Moondog Spot says, okay. So yeah. They walk out together.
Yeah.
And they're maybe, I don't know, like 10 paces up the ramp
mm-hmm.
when Funk attacks them.
Yeah.
Ref calls for the bell before that. As soon as they leave the ring, ref calls for the bell and starts counting. So Funk attacks Moondog Spot from behind and starts to run back towards the ring. They fight for a bit. Funk backdrops Spot.
Mm-hmm.
Near the apron and happens to send him back into the ring.
Yeah.
And as Funk starts to get back in the ring, the ref finishes his 10 count. Spot wins.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is one instance where it's like actually a pretty creative way to finish a match.
But again.
And it's kind of funny.
Yeah. No, this was fine because it's Terry Funk and a guy named Moondog Spot who just like is a dullard with a bone. I mean, that's seemingly his gimmick is dullard with a bone.
No.
I'm not being offensive. It wasn't a shoot. I just looked him up. He has a very nice mic. He's dead. But look, he seems like a super nice guy.
Yeah.
Like, he seems like that's not him. Look, that's not, those aren't the eyes of a dullard.
No.
He played that role very well. Oh, my God.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Pretty hardcore. Moving on.
We could talk more in depth about these matches, but a lot of them are too short to actually go into any detail.
Oh, they're so great. This is what I love about it. It's just, bang, 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 ridiculousness, ridiculousness.
Yeah. After that, we had a Mr. Fuji.
Because here's the thing. What? We can talk about the matches. None of the wrestling was good. Like
a couple matches were
okay,
good.
Tito Santana, he was good. Orndorff was better than I figured.
Yeah, I thought Don Morocco was pretty good, too.
Yeah, he was okay. He was all right. He didn't really stand out to me, but I could see that. Yeah, I was just focused on Tito Santana.
Yeah, he was good.
He was good.
Mr. Fuji in a Don Morocco interview was after the Funk Moondog Spot match.
Yeah, Morocco seemed like he was a charisma hole, though.
A little bit.
He was not the most exciting guy in the world.
No.
What was his gimmick?
He was the Magnificent Morocco.
Oh, okay. He was just really good.
Yeah. And he took on Tito Santana.
Some of his other ring names. Why does the name Aka Oni sound familiar? What, did he go by that name in like one of those THQ games? Don Morrow, Dr. X, The Rock, and the Magnificent M.
Yeah, it's Don the Rock Morocco. I think that's what his name was when he took on Snuka in that cage match.
Gotcha.
So at first, Morocco seems to win with power slam.
Yeah.
Ref counts the pinfall, but then he goes, no, Tito's foot was under the ropes. And then Tito took advantage of the confusion,
mm-hmm.
rolled up Morocco in a small package, and actually won the match.
Yeah. Oh yeah, that was ridiculous. Because he didn't, like, separate them, go back in your corners. He didn't explain anything. He just, Morocco was
celebrating.
And then the old weird ref guy started like pointing at the ropes, and then Tito was like, okay, rolled him up. Morocco has no idea what's going on, and he gets the win.
Yeah.
Even the commentator was like, hold on a second. What's going on there? Why did that just happen there, gorilla? Hey, Monsoon, that was ridiculous. Do you know why? Because nobody knew what was going on.
Yeah, no one knew what was going on.
Poor Don Morocco.
I know.
Anyways.
After that, Bobby Heenan interview. So he put out a bounty on Paul Orndorff.
That's dark.
So $50,000.
Whoa.
So this was after.
In 1985 money, that's like $5 million.
Yeah, that's a lot of money. So by this point, 1985, just a mere 6 months after WrestleMania 1,
mm-hmm.
Paul Orndorff during WrestleMania 1 was a heel. He was Piper's tag team
Correct,
partner yeah, during
main
event.
Against Hogan and T.
Yes. At this point, he had turned face.
Right.
And he was taking on Bob Orton, who yeah. still had that cast on his arm.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Bob Orton was fantastic, too. I always forget.
He was a really good seller.
That he was a good wrestler.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and he was particularly a good seller. But, man, you see him in there, it's like, holy crap. Because he was, I'm not going to say he was a hoss, but he wasn't in shape. Not like his kid.
Not like Orndorff.
No, certainly not like Orndorff. Nobody's in shape like Orndorff. He's Mr. Perfect.
No, he's not. He's Mr. Wonderful.
Mr. Wonderful. Sorry. Anyways.
This was a really fun match.
This was actually a really fun match, but then it ended by DQ because didn't Orton like put a cast on or something?
No, he had his cast and he like rotated
it. Oh, he hit him with it, yeah.
He rotated it
yeah,
on his
right.
arm and then hit him with it.
It's like the Roman Reigns thing. It goes like this.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's what it was.
Can't hit people with the cast there,
no,
Orton.
But that was a fun match. That was probably the first actually well, the Morocco Tito Santana match wasn't bad.
But I was legitimately surprised. I'd never really seen. I mean, I always knew that Orndorff because I'd seen enough of his matches. And for those of you wondering why I'm saying Orndorff and not Orndorff, it's the when Hogan.
Someone else called him Orndorff during this too.
Hulk Hogan. Oh, wait, on the show?
Yeah.
So I first picked it up from, I think it was was it a DVD on The Warrior? Maybe it was a DVD on Hogan when Hogan was talking about working with Paul Orndorff. And he would just call him Orndorff. And maybe it's just like a Florida thing.
Yeah.
Maybe it's like sort of an accent. Maybe he doesn't. Yeah. I don't know. But he's, yeah, me and Orndorff, you know, we go in there, brother. And it just cracked me up because at that point I think I said Orndorff. And then it was ages ago, you corrected me. And I was like, that's how Hogan says it.
Oh, yeah.
Orndorff. So anyways, I don't know. Stupid in-joke.
Before we continue, I want to make a point of saying that Gorilla Monsoon was fantastic.
Oh, yeah. He's the best.
He is fantastic.
He's the absolute best. He is the perfect combination of not being a part of it and calling everything perfectly. He's just a warm blanket, man.
Yes, that's
he's
exactly
just a
what
warm blanket.
Very comforting.
That's what he is. Very comforting.
Fantastic.
Whenever I watch this old stuff, I just get nostalgic for those days.
I know.
Like I barely remember 1985 because it was like a little too far for me, but I was seven.
Yeah, I've been eight.
Or six. And so I remember something.
Oh yeah, I do too. Next, so Vince and Lord Alfred Hayes are back at the tournament board. I believe that's the conclusion of the first round. And Alfred is doing something to Susan.
Yeah, I don't. Is this the one where he was literally like dry? I don't want to say dry humping her. He was really close to her and she looked very uncomfortable.
Yeah, I think this is the one. There's twice that they cut to them. And one time it looked like he literally had his hand on one of her breasts. I think that's the second time. This time he was just kind of like.
He was
holding
hovering,
her
yeah.
uncomfortably around her waist, and
yeah.
she wanted nothing to do with it.
And he, what didn't he have like, didn't he, wasn't he like with his lips, wasn't he like trying to go like,
maybe
something
it was
like
so
that?
Awkward.
It was so, and you know that was probably Vince.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, it'll be funny if you treat her like an object.
It was gross. My note is literally, WTF is Alfred doing to Susan?
Oh, mine is this. Why is Alfred Hayes gripping onto the ghost lady? Number one, if she is a true ghost lady, he should be facing through her. Or she should turn into a skeleton, slime him, and then,
yes,
then float
yes,
away.
Yes, that. Like the opening scene in Ghostbusters.
Exactly. That's what ghosts do. They slime you.
Anyways, Terry Funk came in to like just make things less... So, him coming in like angry and yelling
oddly
made
enough,
things far less awkward.
Oddly enough... Him, Terry Funk walking in a rage made things less awkward.
Yes. And I don't know if you noticed this, but he's talking to Vince's mic and his back is towards the camera, and Vince reaches his hand around to one of his belt loops and rotates So he's facing the camera.
That's great. Oh, man. Why did so many people Orndorff later on at his back to the camera?
Yeah.
Don't they understand the concept of, like,
television production?
Television production of, like, video? I mean, if this was, like, you know, the silent era, I would understand if they're confused by this device.
I know.
Like, all those idiots who were in the theater when they were in that, like, one of the first movies of, like, a train pulling into a station.
Oh, and they thought a train was going to hit them.
It's like, idiots. It's light projecting on a screen.
Yeah.
It's not real.
It's not real.
This happened in the past.
Oh, okay. Moving on from that. First match of the second round was Dynamite Kid versus Adrian Adonis. This is actually a pretty decent match.
No, that's funny. I don't have any notes on
really,
this.
Really? Because Adonis puts the sharpshooter on.
Oh, okay.
On Dynamite Kid.
Oh, wow. Nice.
But they didn't call. They didn't have a name for it. Maybe Adrian Adonis invented the sharpshooter.
He invented it on the spot.
Maybe.
He was watching some
master improviser in the ring.
Maybe he was watching some old film of George Hackenschmidt.
Could be.
Some old timey silent era footage.
So the finish saw Dynamite Kid kicking out of a roll up attempt by Adrian Adonis, and that sent Adrian Adonis into Jimmy Hart, who was standing on the apron.
Yeah. I remember the finish of this. Yeah.
This apparently was a devastating move to Adonis because mm-hmm. he was like seemed like basically out cold.
Yeah, totally.
Dynamite Kid got the cover and got the win, but Adrian Adonis's foot was obviously on the second rope.
Okay, here's the thing: I don't think I've ever seen anybody get their foot to the second rope
and then have no one notice it.
You just put on the first. That's all you need is the first rope. But to go the extra length of having your rope, it was almost like it was a glitch in 2K17.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes you get too close to the rope and your shit sticks to it.
And your foot will levitate a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. It was like that. It was clear as day. And it's like, wait a second. So the ref before with that Steamboat Santana Morocco match.
Yeah. Oh, I know.
He was okay with it because I was like, wait a second. Is the foot on the rope not a thing then? Because I totally forgot about that. I watched this over the course of two nights and my memory's terrible. But yeah, that was odd.
And
the funny thing is his foot stayed there well into the celebration aspect of things. Because then what's his face? Jimmy Hart comes over and he's like, clearly his foot is on the rope.
Yeah.
Ref didn't care.
Yeah, didn't make any matter.
I don't know, man.
Didn't matter at all. Making the phrases now. Mm-hmm. Next, we had a Jesse Ventura interview, because I guess Jesse was trying to help out Macho Man win this tournament. So he excused himself, I believe, to go talk to the Macho Man. Or was that later? No, it was this one.
Okay.
I believe. No, it was later. Sorry. I can't remember if it was later or if it was this one. So again, I watched this over the span of like 3 days.
Yeah, yeah.
But at one point, Jesse...
And I take terrible notes.
Yeah. So Jesse's talking about how, you know, like Macho Man's strategy, so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
Macho Man next takes on Ricky Steamboat. Again, 3 years before their epic classic WrestleMania 3 battle.
And shades of that is in here. Like, yes. This was probably the best match on the actual card. Not surprising.
But again, Macho Man cheated to win, pulls out some brass knuckles from his tights.
I like how deep he went into his dick sack.
Mm-hmm.
He
had it lodged between his butt cheeks.
I think he...
Behind his balls.
Dude, I think he went past taint. Because, like, freaking, Steamboat had him up for a suplex. Back then a suplex is like, you know...
Just dropping someone backwards.
Exactly.
Because Macho Man is on the apron. Steamboat's on the in the ring. And Macho Man...
The ref is behind him.
Goes
so
deep
Macho
into
Man
his tights.
Just opens up the drawer.
Yeah.
And like just starts rooting around for whatever it is he has dug in there.
Yeah.
And it takes him a good, like, I don't know, 10 seconds to find it.
Yeah.
Which is odd. Make that, you know, to figure that one out. He pulls it out. Does that. And I mean, to his credit, like Steamboat, it is sold relatively realistically. Like, if you get knocked once, that's all it takes. And Steamboat just fell back like a sack of potatoes.
Yeah.
Macho Man digs back in there, puts it into his like taint sack or whatever, and gets the cover.
Got the win. Macho Man advances.
Mm-hmm.
Then we had a Moondog Spot interview.
Listen, this is what I'm going to do. Listen, Steamboat, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to hide.
Do you think they made a list of all the spots for that match?
Spot number 69. I'm going to go digging into my taint because I've got something hidden in there. Oh, yeah. Foreign object. I'm not talking about my Dingleberry Man. Oh, yeah.
I started slipping to Bray Wyatt.
But Dingleberry Man.
He did a little bit. So there's a Moondog Spot interview after this. I don't remember him saying much.
No, I think he was a dullard. What do they call them back in the day? Like the really messed up history of America where people are coming to Ellis Island.
It's an imbecile, right?
There was imbecile. There was like, I think like a simple moron or something like that.
So awful.
It's so bad.
It's so bad.
This country has done some messed up things.
It really has.
But anyways, I think he was supposed to be kind of like that.
So the next match was...
low moron.
Yeah, that was one of them. Junkyard Dog versus Moondog Spot. Junkyard Dog headbutts Spot almost immediately. There's no ref in the ring. So Junkyard Dog covers Spot and counts his own pinfall and wins, and it stands.
And it stands. They're cool with that. They're totally cool with that.
Next, Bobby Heenan, another interview. He was doing some follow-up on the Paul Orndorff bounty.
Yeah.
Bob Orton didn't collect on it.
Nope.
Because he didn't put Orndorff out of action.
Correct.
Orndorff was set to take on Tito Santana in the second round. Was Tito's left leg bandaged in the first round match?
Oh, I didn't notice.
Because it was here, and he was selling leg injury the whole time.
Oh, man.
I didn't see anything during that first match. I didn't notice anything in that first match that would...
That was the Morocco roll-up one, right? Yeah, no, I didn't notice anything. Yeah.
One thing I didn't mention. I don't think it came into play later on, but after Dynamite Kid won his match, he like stepped on his knee weird. Did you notice that? And started limping a little bit?
Oh, I didn't notice that.
Looks like he kind of twisted his knee when he stepped on it wrong.
Oof.
Anyways. Tito had
I feel like a lot of this is unsafe practice.
It could be.
Like, we did notice also that the, especially in the slow-mo replays, how bouncy.
Oh, it was like
the mat.
You could hear the springs.
Yeah.
Underneath the ring.
Yeah.
So Orndorff was working Tito's left leg because he had the bandage on it.
Right.
They eventually just brawled to the outside of the ring and double count out.
Mm-hmm.
Which meant that Junkyard Dog advanced directly to the finals.
Yeah. Yeah.
After that, this must have been when, because Vince and Alfred are going over the board again, and Alfred,
he's just,
so bad.
Yeah, no, here's my note here is, Hayes is effing grossing me out.
Yeah, it's so gross. Because she had that dress that had, like, lace that went over the top,
right.
And he had one of his hands under that lace.
Dude, yeah.
It was gross.
And Vince is just back there all, like, sweaty.
I know.
He's like in a tux, but he's probably like directing things too.
Ugh.
Oh, yeah. Really get in there. Oh, yeah. You know, I can see him doing that.
What a creep. Susan was so uncomfortable with the whole
thing. Oh, God. Just the entire time. It's so
awful.
Nasty.
After that, we had a Hulk Hogan interview.
Come a long way, people. So at least appreciate that. Hulk Hogan and his tighty whities was great.
I know.
Yeah. What was that? His face looks so weird, man.
I know.
Like, I don't know what growth stuff he was on back then.
Well, you hear this. I read the book that, I forget the names. There was two reporters from the newspapers in San Francisco. They wrote a book about Balco.
Okay.
And Barry Bonds and stuff like that. And I believe it was in that book, there were stories about how Barry Bonds, the spring after he, you know, started taking performance enhancers, he came to spring training and they said his feet grew and his head grew.
Yeah. Because, okay, here's the thing.
So I think that's, I mean, if you take steroids, it makes your head grow.
Remember the theory that Paul McCartney, the rumor that Paul McCartney had died?
Yeah.
You know, there's like all sorts of...
The Abbey Road cover,
Paul
all that stuff.
Paul is dead,
yeah.
All that kind of stuff, yeah. And some people were saying, if you look at Paul McCartney in like A Hard Day's Night, Help, and then you look at him again, like at Hey Jude, they look like two different people. No, they don't.
No, they don't.
They look exactly the same. It's Paul McCartney. If you look at Hulk Hogan here, he looks distinctly like a different person than he did 10 years later, 1995, okay? Distinctly like a different person.
Yeah.
The funny thing is, if you take a look at the years in between, because I just went there and I was looking through all the WrestleManias in between this and then like, you know, like from WrestleMania 2 to like WrestleMania 9, okay? You can literally see the difference in incremental changes.
Oh, yeah.
You can see the difference there. And I'm sure it would not surprise me at all is, you know, maybe during one of his hiatuses, I don't know, he got some work done, like on his jaw or something like that, had a facelift, I don't know. But, man, his face changed in those 10 years.
Yeah, sorry, it's not steroids, I guess. I'm just doing a quick search here. It's HGH that can make your head grow.
A lot of times people confuse the two.
Yeah, I know.
I don't really even know much of the difference in either.
I don't know if I could explain it to you.
Yeah, I don't really need you to. But yeah, so it says HGH is what makes your face look different?
Well, it can make your head grow. Yeah. Or affect the size of your head.
And then isn't there also like a puffiness factor? I thought I remember there was like a puffiness factor of some sort.
That can happen too, because I guess steroids can, you can retain water.
Right, right, right. So, man, he literally looked like, if you look at him back then.
Oh, I know. He looked completely different.
And you know what's funny is that I do have to backtrack a little bit. So we talked about this on one of the shows recently, and I forget which one. But I had said that I didn't necessarily understand the, you know, certain people like Stone Cold. Remember saying like Stone Cold had that charisma where like when he started talking, you couldn't look away.
Yeah.
The Rock, same thing. And I said I didn't really get it with Hogan. But back then, Hogan, especially compared to everybody else on the roster, when they would speak, there was something bigger than
I would say it. Not everybody else, because I think Macho Man.
Oh, Macho Man. No, Macho Man is charisma. An exception. Macho Man, you can, dude, you get on one of those like 11-minute Macho Man promo compilations, you cannot turn away.
Oh, I know.
You cannot turn away. That man was an alien of some
sort. And I think the other thing, too, is by the time Hogan got to WCW, he was cruising.
Oh, yeah.
He was totally cruising.
And there is that as well. And it's mainly, at that point, he was relying on the myth that he had built for himself. And that's totally, you know, that makes total sense. But when you go back and look at this, you see it a lot more evident, just juxtaposed with guys. I mean, Ventura was one of those guys who was amazing on the mic, too.
Yeah.
I mean, are you sitting there talking the whole time? When he's at the end, when he was like lambasting Junkyard Dog because Macho Man didn't get to rest and he did. And it's like, man, you cannot take your eyes off Jesse Ventura. Hold on, I'm gonna
pause. That's fine. There. After the Hogan interview, we had a WWF title match.
Yeah.
We had a WWF title match between Rowdy Roddy Piper and Hulk Hogan.
Yeah, this is cool.
It was actually a pretty decent match.
It's actually not a bad match. Just had a wonky, didn't have like a wonky finish.
Yeah.
What was the finish of this match?
Bob Orton ran in.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Hit Hogan with the cast.
Yeah.
But Hogan was never a great wrestler.
Right. Right.
But he tried a bit more in his WWF days.
Yeah.
Especially earlier on. If you take it up, like, look at his match against Savage at WrestleMania 5, I guess it was.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
Especially the first half of that match mm-hmm. plays very much like a Macho Man
yeah,
match.
Yeah.
And Hogan was doing, he busted out an arm bar.
Mm-hmm.
Cross arm breaker, a couple mm-hmm. other moves.
Yeah.
Of course, second half of that match was a typical Hogan match with a lot of punching. Yeah. But every once in a while, he'll bust out a move that you don't expect from him.
Yeah, totally.
At one point, Piper gives Hogan a double axe handle and essentially pushes Hogan into the ref. So we get a ref bump. The ref's out.
Ref's out.
Piper takes this opportunity to get a chair.
Mm-hmm.
Hits Hogan with the chair.
Nice.
Piper's trying to hit Hogan across
very
the throat.
Very mustard-colored chair.
Yeah. Piper tries to hit Hogan in the throat with the chair. Hogan blocks it, takes the chair from Piper, and hits him across the back with it. At this point, the ref comes to. They wrestle a bit more. Hogan puts a sleeper on Piper. And at that point, Cowboy Bob Orton comes in and hits Hogan with the cast.
Nice.
Hogan wins by DQ. Paul Orndorff runs to the ring with a chair and makes the save. And apparently after this, Orndorff and Hogan would feud again.
That's bizarre. Because
and it was one of the most profitable feuds in the history of wrestling.
If Orndorff, like back then, they would take forever to do anything. You know, that Hogan Macho Man rivalry
was like essentially 2 years.
Lasted 2 years.
2 years in the making, yeah.
So the fact that Orndorff was you know, heel, face, heel again within the span of 12 months, that's kind of weird. It's kind of surprising.
I know.
Yeah.
But I guess they probably did that so Hogan could complete his feud with Piper.
Yeah.
And then build an alliance between Hogan and Orndorff, only for Orndorff to swerve Hogan. White hot feud at that point.
Oh yeah, big
just
time.
massively intense feud with kinda a lot of crazy, heat on Orndorff.
Kind of crazy how. So Orndorff, he was never the world champ.
Not in WWF, no.
Right. Kind of weird how he didn't really make much of an impact in the rock and wrestling era. You know, I mean, he was integral obviously to WrestleMania 1, but after that, you don't really, you know.
By the time WrestleMania 2 had come. He wasn't in the main event scene anymore because Hogan took on King Kong Bundy in the main event.
And then after that, of course, it was Hogan Andre.
Yeah.
And Orndorff was just... But he ended up wrestling until...
The 90s.
Well, the 90s. Yeah, the 90s, yeah.
After that, we had another Junkyard Dog interview. I don't remember about what, though. Do you have any notes for this?
No, I don't. No, my notes get really thin at that point.
Okay.
There was nothing like, I don't remember anything. Junkyard Dog is a very understated promo guy back then. So,
after this, we had Macho Man versus Dynamite Kid. I don't know if they wrestled again, but from the small sampling that we got from this, it was pretty good.
Yeah, it was. It was.
The finish was a little weird. Dynamite Kid hits a superplex on Macho Man. And so the after.
Really surprising move they would pull that out. Jesse Ventura was like, what is this, a superplex?
Well, that was Cowboy Bob Orton's finisher, was a superplex.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's why
Randy does it.
Oh.
So after Dynamite Kid hits the superplex, he sticks his legs up in the air. Looks like he might say something to Savage.
Yeah.
And then Savage gets him in the cradle and gets the win.
Yeah.
But it wasn't like a fluid movement where...
No, it was not at all.
Where Savage just happened to... You know, get the advantage and get a small cradle or a small package on
Dynamite. It looked like they were practicing. It looked like they were figuring this move out for the first time.
Or it looked like Dynamite Kid really didn't want to lose and made it obvious that he was losing.
That could be, yeah. That could be. It kind of looked like when I first watched it, I was like, wait a second. Was that like a double pin? And you're like, no, Savage just won. I'm like, it looks so awkward and weird. It looked like they pinned each other. Then I went back and looked, and sure enough, like Macho Man does have a shoulder up and everything.
Yeah.
It just looked weird, though.
It did look weird.
Yeah.
After this, back to Vince and Susan. Thankfully, Lord Alfred Hayes has gone down the ring.
Yeah, thank God for that. But Susan still looks like she's like grossed out.
Yeah.
Like she probably had to take several showers when she got home.
And they were hyping up this Rolls-Royce giveaway.
Ooh.
Vince was saying there was $250,000 entrance into this contest to win a Rolls-Royce. And then we go down to the ring. A bunch of people talk.
Mm-hmm.
Jack Tunney is one of them. Some another WWE
some,
executive.
Like, total like nerdlingers.
Some guy from some sweepstakes thing.
Yeah.
Before Lord Alfred Hayes makes the announcement of the winner, and the Chicago crowd boos.
Yeah, it was great. Chicago crowd, man. Since day one, they've been hardcore. They started chanting CM Punk, CM Punk. Wait, so who? I didn't even know who won the car.
I mean, it was just a person.
Just some jabron?
Yeah, it was a person.
Were they there?
No.
I wonder if they actually won it. I wonder if that was actually.
Find out, because we can never find out if anybody won that Camaro.
Never found out about the Camaro. WCW.
Then we had a Hulk Hogan interview in the locker room with Mean Gene talking about Cowboy Bob and Piper.
Mm-hmm.
Orndorff walks across camera. Kind of have his back to camera. He gets involved too. And I believe at some point after this, Hogan and Orndorff had a tag team match, if I remember correctly, against Piper and Cowboy Bob Orton.
It was this old man. God, it looks like you if you live to their like 70, but he looks like he's in his 50s.
Yeah.
His name is Michael Hambley. Oh my God, we found it out. Look at this.
They got him the car in a matter of 18 days. That's cool.
It feels great. Look at that leather jacket.
You want a Rolls Royce. That's an expensive automobile.
No kidding.
You have to pay taxes on that. That's the bummer part.
Oh, I know. But they're in a wet parking lot in the woods somewhere. So, oh, look, here it is. Look at that.
They might. What?
Look. That thumbnail dear. Right there of Lord Hayes dear. With his hand on her boob.
You know, on car commercials. Why the road's always wet. It's not because it rains, because they think it makes things look cooler.
Yeah, it does.
I know it does.
That's true.
They might have done that there, as I'm saying.
No, they didn't.
A PA is out there.
Nobody's
with hose.
Doing that. Nobody in the WWF Vince, is thinking
oh,
about
I
that.
Oh, I don't know. Vince was so concerned with appearances. He probably called up some advertiser friend and says, how do you make these car commercials look so great?
Oh, come on. He called up a carny. What do you do with these cars? Maybe the people at Rolls-Royce
could be
helped them out with that one.
That could be.
I don't know, man. But of course they do it in like what looks like a secluded wooded area.
Just be where the guy lives. Our main event, the finals of the Wrestling Classic.
When was the Wrestling Classic?
November of 85. November 5th or 8th.
Oh, okay. All right. So that's an
couple
acceptable
weeks.
Period of time.
Yeah, a couple weeks.
All right.
Macho Man taking on Junkyard Dog.
Oh, yeah.
Early on, they're brawling on the outside, and Macho Man takes a chair and throws it at Junkyard Dog.
Yeah.
He wasn't disqualified.
No.
Wasn't disqualified.
Oh, wait, do we confirm, was there a ref for this match?
Yeah, there was.
Okay, well, that's good.
And then later on, Macho Man is like choking Junkyard Dog over a rail. Wasn't disqualified.
No DQ.
Could have been disqualified for both those.
There's a whole lot of Macho Man running away from the faces in this entire thing.
Yeah.
And he was running away from Junkyard Dog, who it was like a video game thing, like when you're fighting like a video game boss and like you run away from him a lot. Then you get back to him and he's like one move and you're like, God damn it. And you have to run away again. Yeah. Like an early video game. Like, cause all Junkyard do, he would just like headbutt him in the lower, he would grab his trunks. He did this several times, grab Savage's lower trunks and then like headbutts him on the back. And then Savage would like run away some more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the finish saw a Junkyard Dog.
Did Junkyard Dog's wrestling ever improve? Cause I honestly don't know. I really don't know.
I don't remember.
Was that just his thing? People loved him though.
Yeah. He was great.
Yeah.
Junkyard Dog, body drop, Macho Man over the top rope. Even 1985 WWF, that wasn't a disqualification.
No.
And that led to a count out win for Junkyard Dog.
Yeah.
Junkyard Dog was the winner of the first and only wrestling classic.
By count out.
Yep.
And I love Jesse says, or somebody said, maybe it was Monsoon said, the crowd's going crazy here. And you just see people like, what happened? Who won that Rolls Royce? Boo. CM Punk. So, yeah, that was the wrestling classic. At least somebody got a Rolls Royce out of it.
It's true.
And Vince McMahon made his company look like $1 million in the process.
Yeah.
Not really. No. It's kind of interesting, though. Like, I mean, I haven't watched WrestleMania 1 in a while, but I just feel like WrestleMania 1 came off like a spectacle. You got Mr. T there.
Cyndi Lauper.
Cyndi Lauper's there. Was Bobby Uecker there yet?
I don't think so.
Yeah, like, you know.
But Muhammad Ali was there.
Muhammad Ali was there?
Yeah.
And then this just seemed ramshackle. It really did.
I think it was the ring. You could hear the springs in the ring.
It was a lot more than that.
Well, I mean, that was kind of like.
Participants.
The
Lord Alfred Hayes sexually assaulting people. Groping them.
That's gross.
And the funny thing is, Lord Alfred Hayes, it says that I looked him up. It said he was 5'11".
Yeah.
Was Susan like 7 feet tall? Because I feel like she was much taller than him.
Yeah, she was.
Ghosts are usually taller than they were in the real world.
Well, except they're levitating.
In their spectral form, they're taller than usual.
No, I think it's because they're levitating.
Right, exactly. But, you know, regardless.
No, I'm saying the actual height is maybe the same, but since their feet aren't bound to the ground, they're levitating, thus they appear taller.
There you go. That could be. We should, for the thumbnail for this and the title, can we say Ghost in the WWE? And then the thumbnail will be that thumbnail of like her next to him.
Ugh.
And then I'll like slightly opacity her, make her less opaque, like through Photoshop.
You mean the Lord Alfred Hayes tribute?
Yeah.
We're not going to be able to monetize that video if you use that stuff.
Okay, we'll use the other one where he's just like next to her. The one where Vince is next to her. Well, I'll Photoshop her so she's less transparent. And then, or she's more transparent, rather.
Yeah.
And then, like, make a red circle around her. I'm doing that now. Okay. That's the thumb for this.
There
this,
you
for
go.
This video.
There you go.
Ghosts in the WWE going in Raw reviews.
That's good.
The wrestling classic. Why not? Otherwise, it'll get 12,000 views. It's gonna get the same number of views anyway.
Yep. Might as well have some fun with
mine.
It.
Might as well be stupid.
All right, Steve. Fun. What are we gonna watch next week?
The very first episode of ECW, you can find it on the network.
Eastern Championship
Wrestling. It's Eastern Championship Wrestling. So I want you guys all to witness the birth of what would eventually become the iconic ECW, see its roots, and how far it went in a very short period of time. Because this is pre-Heyman. It was like you said, Eastern Championship Wrestling.
Todd Gordon was still running it, right?
Yeah, the Sandman was literally a surfer gimmick. Oh, it's hilarious. It's only 38 minutes long, but we can talk probably about an hour about it. And thank you for tuning in. Until next time, we'll talk to you guys later.
Bye.